not looking up from his screen. "There's a new guy now, Raymond Gibbons. He started last month." She said this as though I should have known. Still not looking up, she wrote his full name and telephone extension on a post-it note and handed it to me. "Thank you so much. You've been extremely helpful as usual, Loretta," I said. It went over her head, of course. I phoned the number but got his voicemail.
"Hi, Raymond here, but also not here, like Schrodinger's cat. Leave a message after the beep. Cheers."
I shook my head in disgust and spoke slowly and clearly into the machine. "Good morning, Mr. Gibbons. My name is Miss Oliphant, and I am the finance clerk. My computer has stopped working, and I would be most grateful if you could see your way to repairing it today. Should you require any further details, you may reach me on extension 535. Thank you most kindly." I hoped that my clear, concise message might serve as an exemplar for him. I waited for 10 minutes, tidying my desk, but he did not return my call. After 2 hours of paper filing and in the absence of any communication from Mr. Gibbons, I decided to take a very early lunch break. It had crossed my mind that I ought to ready myself physically for a potential meeting with the musician by making a few improvements. Should I make myself over from the inside out or work from the outside in? I compiled a list in my head of all the appearance-related work which would need to be undertaken: hair, head and body, nails, toe and finger, eyebrows, cellulite, teeth, scars. All of these things needed to be updated, enhanced, improved. Eventually I decided to start from the outside and work my way in. That's what often happens in nature, after all. The shedding of skin, rebirth. Animals, birds and insects can provide such useful insights. If I'm ever unsure as to the correct course of action, I'll think, what would a ferret do? Or how would a salamander respond to this situation? Invariably, I find the right answer. I walked past Julie's beauty basket every day on my way to work. As luck would have it, they had a cancellation. It would take around 20 minutes. Kayla would be my therapist, and it would cost £45. 45! Still, I reminded myself as Kayla led me towards a room downstairs, it was worth it. Kayla, like the other employees, was wearing a white outfit resembling surgical scrubs and white clogs. I approved of this pseudo-medical apparel. We went into an uncomfortably small room, barely large enough to accommodate the bed, chair and side table.
"Now then," she said, "what you need to do is pop off your..."
She paused and looked at my lower half.
"Trousers and your underwear, then pop up onto the couch. You can be naked from the waist down, or if you prefer, you can pop these on."
She placed a small packet on the bed.
"Cover yourself with a towel and I'll pop back in to see you in a couple of minutes, okay?"
I nodded. I hadn't anticipated quite so much popping. Once the door had closed behind her, I removed my shoes and stepped out of my trousers. Should I keep my socks on? I thought, on balance, that I probably should. I pulled down my underpants and wondered what to do with them. It didn't seem right to drape them over the chair in full view as I'd done with my trousers, so I folded them up carefully and put them into my shopper. Feeling rather exposed, I picked up the little packet that she'd left on the bed and opened it. I shook out the contents and held them up. A very small pair of black underpants, in a style which I recognised as tanga in Marks and Spencer's nomenclature, and made from the same papery fabric as tea bags. I stepped into them and pulled them up. They were far too small, and my flesh bulged out from the front, sides and back. The bed was very high, and I found a plastic step underneath that I used to help me ascend. I lay down. It was lined with towels and topped with the same scratchy blue paper that you find on the doctor's couch. Another black towel was folded at my feet, and I pulled it up to my waist to cover myself. The black towels worried me. What sort of dirty staining was the colour choice designed to hide? I stared at the ceiling and counted the spotlights, then looked from side to side. Despite the dim lighting, I could see scuff marks on the pale walls. Kayla knocked and entered, all breezy cheerfulness.
"Now then," she said, "what are we doing today?"
"As I said, a bikini wax, please." She laughed.
"Yes, sorry. I meant, what kind of wax would you like?"
I thought about this. "Just the usual kind? The candle kind?" I said.
"What shape?"
she said tersely, then noticed my expression.
"So," she said patiently, counting them off on her fingers, "you've got your French, your Brazilian, or your Hollywood."
I pondered. I ran the words through my mind again, over and over, the same technique I used for solving crossword anagrams, waiting for the letters to settle into a pattern. French, Brazilian, Hollywood. French, Brazilian, Hollywood. "Hollywood," I said finally.
"Hollywood, and so would Eleanor."
She ignored my wordplay and lifted up the towel.
"Oh," she said. "Okay."
She went over to the table and opened a drawer, took something out.
"It's going to be an extra £2 for the clipper guard,"
she said sternly, pulling on a pair of disposable gloves. The clippers buzz, buzz, buzzed, and I stared at the ceiling. This didn't hurt at all. When she'd finished, she used a big fat brush to sweep the shaved hair onto the floor. I felt panic start to rise within me. I hadn't looked at the floor when I came in. What if she'd done this with the other clients? Were their pubic hairs now adhering to the soles of my polka-dot socks? I started to feel slightly sick at the thought.
"That's better," she said. "Now I'll be as quick as I can. Don't use perfumed lotions in the area for at least 12 hours after this, okay?"
She stirred the pot of wax that was heating on the side table. "Oh, don't worry, I'm not much of a one for unguents, Kayla," I said. She goggled at me. I'd have thought that staff in the beauty business would have better developed people skills. She was almost as bad as my colleagues back in the office. She pushed the paper pants to one side and asked me to pull the skin taut. Then she painted a stripe of warm wax onto my pubis with a wooden spatula and pressed a strip of fabric onto it. Taking hold of the end, she ripped it off in one rapid flourish of clean, bright pain.
"Moriturite salutant," I whispered, tears pricking my eyes.
This is what I say in such situations, and it always cheers me up no end. I started to sit up, but she gently pushed me back down.
"Oh, there's a good bit more to go, I'm afraid,"
she said, sounding quite cheerful. Pain is easy. Pain is something with which I am familiar. I went into the little white room inside my head, the one that's the colour of clouds. It smells of clean cotton and baby rabbits. The air inside the room is the palest sugar almond pink, and the loveliest music plays. Today it was Top of the World by the Carpenters. That beautiful voice. She sounds so blissful, so full of love. Lovely, lucky Karen Carpenter. Kayla continued to dip and rip. She asked me to bend my knees out to the sides and place my heels together. "Like frog's legs," I said, but she ignored me, intent on her work. She ripped out the hair from right underneath. I hadn't even considered that such a thing would be possible. When she'd finished, she asked me to lie normally again and then pulled down the paper pants. She smeared hot wax onto the remaining hair and ripped it all off triumphantly.
"There,"
she said, removing the gloves and wiping her brow with the back of her hand.
"Now doesn't that look so much better?"
She passed me a hand mirror so I could look at myself.
"But I'm completely bare,"
I said, horrified.
"That's right, a Hollywood," she said. "That's what you asked for."
I felt my fists clench tight and shook my head in disbelief. I had come here to start to become a normal woman, and instead she'd make me look like a child.
"Kayla,"
I said, unable to believe the situation I now found myself in.
The man in whom I am interested is a normal adult man. He will enjoy sexual relations with a normal adult woman. Are you trying to imply that he's some sort of paedophile? How dare you?
She stared at me, horrified. I had had enough of this.
Please leave me to get dressed now, I said, turning my face to the wall.
She left and I climbed down from the couch. I pulled my trousers on, consoled by the thought that the hair would surely grow back before our first intimate encounter. I didn't tip Kayla on the way out. When I returned to the office, my computer still wasn't working. I sat down gingerly and called Raymond in IT again, but it went straight to his preposterous message. I decided to go upstairs and find him. From his voicemail greeting, he sounded like the kind of person who would ignore a ringing telephone and sit around doing nothing. Just as I pushed my chair back, a man approached my desk. He was barely taller than me and was wearing green training shoes, ill-fitting denim trousers, and a t-shirt showing a cartoon dog lying on top of its kennel. It was stretched taut against a burgeoning belly. He had pale, sandy hair cut short in an attempt to hide the fact that it was thinning and receding, and patchy blonde stubble. All of his visible skin, both face and body, was very pink. A word sprang to mind. Porcine.
Oliphant? He said.
Yes, Eleanor Oliphant, I am she, I said. He lurched towards my desk.
I'm Raymond, IT, he said.
I offered him my hand to shake, which eventually he did, rather tentatively, yet more evidence of the lamentable decline in modern manners. I moved away and allowed him to sit at my desk.
What seems to be the problem?
He asked, staring at my screen. I told him.
Okie dokie, he said, typing noisily.
I picked up my telegraph and told him I'd be in the staff room. There was little point in my standing around while he mended the computer. The crossword setter today was Elgar, whose clues are always elegant and fair. I was tapping my teeth with the pen, pondering 12 down, when Raymond loped into the room, interrupting my train of thought. He looked over my shoulder.
Crosswords, eh? He said. Never seen the point of them. Give me a good computer game any day.
Call of Duty. I ignored his inane wittering. Did you fix it? I asked him.
Yep, he said, sounding pleased. You had quite a nasty virus. I've cleaned up your hard drive and reset the firewall. You should run a full system scan once a week, ideally.
He must have noticed my uncomprehending expression.
Come on, I'll show you.
We walked along the corridor. The floor squeaked beneath his hideous training shoes. He coughed.
So, have you worked here long, Eleanor? He said.
Yes, I replied, increasing my pace. He managed to keep up with me, but was slightly out of breath.
Right, he said.
He cleared his throat.
I started here a few weeks ago. I was at Sanderson's before, in town. Do you know them?
No, I said. We reached my desk and I sat down. He hovered too close. He smelled of cooking and faintly of cigarettes. Unpleasant. He told me what to do and I followed his instructions, committing them to memory. By the time he had finished, I'd reached the limit of my interest in technological matters for the day.
Thank you for your assistance, Raymond, I said pointedly.
Raymond saluted and heaved himself to his feet. A man with a less military bearing was hard to imagine.
No bother, Eleanor. See you around.
I very much doubt it, I thought, opening up the spreadsheet which listed this month's overdue accounts. He loped off with a strange, bouncy walk, springing too hard on the balls of his feet. A lot of unattractive men seem to walk in such a manner, I've noticed. I'm sure training shoes don't help. The other night, the singer had worn beautiful leather brogues. He was tall, elegant, and graceful. It was hard to believe that the singer and Raymond were members of the same species. I shifted uncomfortably in my chair. There was throbbing pain and the beginnings of an itch downstairs. Perhaps I should have put my underpants back on. The leaving do started around 4:30, and I made sure to clap extravagantly at the end of Bob's speech and say, "Hear, hear, bravo!" loudly so that everyone noticed me. I left at 4:59 p.m. and walked to the shopping mall as fast as the chafing occasioned by my newly hairless epidermis allowed. I got there by 4:15, thank God. Bird in the hand is what I was thinking, given the importance of the task. So I simply headed straight into the first big department store I saw and took the lift to the electrical department. A young man with a grey shirt and a shiny tie was staring at the banks of giant TV screens. I approached and informed him that I wished to purchase a computer. He looked scared. "Desktop, laptop, tablet," he intoned. I had no idea what he was talking about. "I haven't bought a computer before, Liam," I explained, reading his name badge. "I'm a very inexperienced technology consumer." He pulled at the collar of his shirt as though trying to free his enormous Adam's apple from its constraints. He had the look of a gazelle or an impala, one of those boring beige animals with large round eyes on the sides of its face, the kind of animal that always gets eaten by a leopard in the end. This was a rocky start.
"What will you be using it for?"
he asked, not making eye contact.
"That's absolutely none of your business," I said, most offended.
He looked like he might cry and I felt bad. He was only young. I touched his arm, even though I hate touching. "I'm afraid I'm a bit anxious because it is absolutely imperative that I am able to go online this weekend," I explained. His nervous expression remained in place.
"Liam," I said slowly, "I simply need to purchase some sort of computer equipment that I can use in the comfort of my own home in order to conduct some internet-based research. I may in time send electronic messages from it. That is all. Do you have something suitable in stock?"
The boy stared heavenwards and thought deeply.
"A laptop and mobile internet access?" he said.
Why was he asking me, for goodness sakes? I nodded and handed over my debit card. When I got home, slightly giddy at how much money I'd spent, I realised that there was nothing to eat. Friday was Margherita Pizza Day, of course, but my routine was, for the first time ever, somewhat out of kilter. I recalled that I had a flyer in the tea towel drawer, something that was put through my letterbox a while ago. I found it easily and smoothed it out. There were money-off coupons along the bottom which had expired. I guessed the prices would have gone up, but assumed that the phone number had stayed the same, and they presumably still sold pizzas. Even these old prices were ridiculous, though, and I actually laughed out loud at them. In Tesco Metro, the pizzas cost a quarter of that price. I decided that I'd go for it. Yes, it was extravagant and indulgent, but why not? Life should be about trying new things, exploring boundaries, I reminded myself. The man on the other end of the line told me that the pizza would arrive in 15 minutes. I brushed my hair, took off my slippers and put my work shoes back on. I wondered how they managed with the black pepper. Would the man bring a pepper mill with him? Surely he wouldn't grind it over the pizza while he stood on the doorstep. I put the kettle on in case he wanted a cup of tea. They had told me on the phone how much it would cost, and I looked out the money, put it in an envelope and wrote "Pizza Pronto" on the front. I didn't bother with the address. I wondered whether it was the done thing to tip, and wished I had someone to ask. Mummy wouldn't be able to advise. She doesn't get to decide what she eats. The flaw with the pizza plan was the wine. They didn't deliver it, the man on the phone said, and actually sounded quite amused that I'd asked. Strange, what could be more normal than pizza and wine? I couldn't see how I was going to acquire something to drink in time to have with the pizza. I really needed something to drink. I worried over it as I waited for the delivery. In the end, the pizza experience was extremely disappointing. The man simply thrust a big box into my hand and took the envelope, which he then rudely ripped open right in front of me.
I heard him mutter, "Fuck's